This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody. This is Greg Gazin. When we listen to a speaker, there are basically three things we expect from them. We expect them to have a certain level of expertise on the topic they're speaking on. They also need that innate ability to communicate with us in an informative and entertaining and hopefully engaging way. We also need to feel that they are authentic, not just a talking head spewing out impressive words. Otherwise, the first two won't matter. Our guest today will enlighten us on that third important attribute, authenticity. Cultivating authenticity as a speaker, which just so happens to be the title of her article. We're so fortunate today we'll be speaking with Elizabeth Denziger, and she likes to be called Liz. She is a woman of many talents. Liz is the founder of WorkTalk Communications Consulting. With over three decades of experience, she's also the author of four books, including Get to the Point, a text on business writing initially published by Random House. Her writings have also appeared in many magazines and journals, including Harvard Business Review and Inc.com, where she's a columnist. Now, it's estimated that companies lose more than $1 billion per day because of poor writing. Liz has taught business communications to companies throughout the United States, enabling their people to wield the power of words to enhance their credibility and catapult ahead in their careers. Liz's article appears in the January 2024 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. It's entitled Cultivating Authenticity as a Speaker, subtitled Learn How to Let Your True Self Shine While Presenting. Coming to us today from Los Angeles, California, Liz Denziger, welcome to the Toastmasters podcast.
Hi, how are you today, Greg? It's nice to be here.
It's absolutely nice to be here. And thank you so much for writing that article and agreeing to appear on the podcast. To kick things off, could you perhaps define authenticity and what does it mean for a person to have that attribute or quality?
Well, the dictionary defines authenticity as being true to one's own personality, spirit, or character. And it also implies something that is genuine and worthy of belief. So, you know, you could say a genuine diamond, a genuine emerald, and a genuine person is authentic. So when people are what we call congruent means that their inner self and their outer self more or less line up.
That's interesting. Now, sometimes we find that we can't really be our true selves in the environment that we're in. How can one be authentic if the environment doesn't really allow you to be who you really are?
I think that, and I go over this in the article, that the first element of authenticity is really to know yourself. We have to have that core self-knowledge about what really matters to us as individuals. If we bring our humanity to our workplace or to our environment, I think that it is likely to be welcomed. That is different from bringing one's political position, one's religious position, or one's view on international politics. Those, you might think that's part of your, quote, authentic self. Like, it's core to my being that I support a particular political candidate. And that might not be welcome. That might be inappropriate in many contexts. But I believe that it is always appropriate to be authentic as a human being and say, but to be brief, you just have to be really, really brief in your authentic comments. So I think that there's a place for humanity in every context.
When you say be brief in your comments, can you perhaps give us a small example of that?
For example, it's one thing to say, I'm feeling a little off my game this morning. I'm going to try and get up to speed. It's not appropriate to say, my cat had diarrhea all night and I took her to the veterinary emergency room and she might need surgery and she might need this. Okay, nobody is interested. And that I think is what we have to really get. And it's a humbling thing. But most people are not particularly interested in the details of our lives. It's like when a person says, how are you? They're not really expecting the whole story of how you are. So, you know, I think that you can tell a person, like, for example, well, I got a call from my doctor and I got to call him back and I'm a little concerned about that. Or I have a big commitment coming up and I'm a little preoccupied with it. All that is fine. But to go into the gory details is overkill.
Yeah, it seems that things have changed because in the past, it's more along the lines of, well, you know, it's up to you. It's your problem. What goes on outside the office or outside the environment, you're here to do a job. So is that just a change in philosophy we're having?
Frankly, I don't think it's that much of a change. I don't think it's changed that much. Mm-hmm. I think that employers say, you know, that the whole concept of bringing your whole self to work or to your presentations, I don't think that's as universally accepted as people would like to think it is. Because the bottom line is, when you're presenting, you have a particular point that you want to make. There's a reason you're presenting. And the reason you're presenting is not to go on and on about how you're feeling and what's going on in your life. I mean, it's like, as Judith Jeannud, who's a very well-known presentation coach who I quote in the article, giving a presentation is not group therapy. If you really want to go on and talk about yourself and your problems, you should really hire a therapist. Because when you're presenting, make your presentation. When you're working, do your work. Yes, you can. Then there's probably a little more space now to say, oh, I'm feeling sad today. I'm feeling overwhelmed today. I'm feeling this. I'm feeling that. But mostly in life, we need to get on with it. And I think we can do that and still be authentic. Because being authentic means being empathetic. And that is where the authenticity is not just about me, but my authenticity and being tuned into myself and my own feelings enables me to tune into you and your feelings. And it's when you feel that authenticity coming from me as a reflection, that's when you feel comfortable with me, not when I'm blabbing on about myself, which is not being authentic. But the authenticity is part of listening, and empathy are key elements of authenticity.
I had a conversation a few months back with Jim Cathcart. Of course, he's a famous public speaker. And one of the things that he had mentioned was, it's okay to address that elephant in the room. He was making reference, I think, to an alarm going off in the building. But what you're saying makes a lot of sense, because if you're feeling something, or if the audience is sensing something from you and you address it, so all of a sudden you're worried about that doctor's appointment, so you just kind of mention it in passing, it's out there, it's open, everybody can get on with life. It makes a lot of sense.
That's a beautiful point. And I totally agree with Jim that you do have to address the elephant in the room. And that makes everybody, because otherwise that's all people are looking at and thinking about, is the elephant in the room. And by acknowledging briefly, for example, there may be an election coming up at some point. Half the country is going to be, there is an election coming up, and half the country is going to be really happy with the result. And half the country is going to be really upset with the result. So I think that after something major like an election or some other public thing, it's appropriate to acknowledge, well, some of us are going to be happy and some of us are going to be sad, but we still have our presentation to give. That's the kind of thing that you can acknowledge without saying, oh, I'm so glad that my candidate won, which would be polarizing.
Yeah, that's true. And it takes away the focus on you, or for you focusing on the audience.
And it's also lacking in empathy to gloat.
That's true. Yeah. Now, when it comes to speaking, we're often taught that things should be done a certain way. And I know that many of us were inclined to mimic people that we admire. What are your thoughts on that with respect to authenticity?
I think it's a mistake. And I'm sure that your listeners have seen this and heard it. When a person seems to have carefully in advance synchronized their gestures with certain words in their presentation, they come across as wooden, or it's just strange to see a person going, oh, I move my hand now, I raise my hand now. Whereas if you're in the flow of your presentation, you allow your hands to move naturally. You allow yourself just to flow along with your words. Now, having said that, I think that in general, things like having good posture are elements that should be present in every presentation. But as far as moving your hands, shrugging your shoulders, be in the flow and don't try and mimic others, because others, you know, the famous British playwright Oscar Wilde said, be yourself. Everyone else is already taken. Nobody is going to be exactly like you, and you're not going to be exactly like somebody else. And that's the beauty of life, is that we are all unique. And so it doesn't pay to mimic other people.
I know for some of us who have this fear of public speaking, and I think you're also referencing, you're indirectly referencing your character, Ron, in the article, who comes across as this easygoing, sociable guy, but the environment told him that he needed to be formal, or at least he perceived that. So of course, his presentation ended up being a disaster, but that almost seems like a paradox, does it not?
It is a paradox. And I see it all the time in my work as a writing trainer. When a person writes something that's really stilted and wooden, I just put the paper aside and say, well, what do you want to say? And they just kind of say it. I'm like, okay, just write that down. And it's the same thing. I think that when people are speaking, in other words, if you have a conversation with the person, they're not generally self-conscious. They're just talking. But then they get up in front of an audience, and somehow the idea of just speaking goes out the window, and they think, or at some level they're thinking, I am doing speaking. Now I am speaking. Then they get inauthentic, because they've put that level of self-consciousness into what they were doing, when in fact, if they would just relax and focus on one person in the audience who looks friendly and think, well, I'm just talking to that friend, I'm talking to my friends here, and just let it flow, then they wouldn't do that.
So perhaps they're not as much inauthentic as the audience maybe perceives them that way. Perhaps it's some training that they might need. If you think about some of the great actors, some of the ones that win Academy Awards, I mean, in their roles, they're so convincing. You believe that they are that person.
I think you raised an important point, which is the point of acting as if.
Oh.
That's a whole concept, to act as if. In other words, let's just say that you have to give a presentation. Really, inside yourself, you're quaking in your boots and you're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm so afraid of failing, blah, blah, blah. You could kind of say, I'm going to act as if I were a really confident speaker. I'm going to act as if I was like this. And that is ironically not inauthentic, but it's bringing out a different element of what's already inside you. I know it seems paradoxical. It's paradoxical to think, be yourself, but if yourself is a shuddering mass of nerves, then being yourself in a presentation is probably not going to work. You have to be yourself, which means to acknowledge within yourself the truth. It's interesting, because when I was interviewing Judith Jornad, I said, well, maybe if a person is nervous, they should share that with the audience at the beginning as a kind of humanizing thing. And she disagreed with me. She thought that it's a mistake to say, well, I'm nervous today, but rather to tap into a different part of yourself and think of, how do I communicate with my spouse? How do I communicate with my friends? How do I communicate with my children, hopefully positively? That self, who you are, is as much yourself as the self that is presenting in front of the group. And yet if the self that's presenting in front of the group is terrified, but presumably you're not terrified to talk to your friends. So it's a question of tapping into a different part of yourself in which you do have the confidence to speak.
So definitely there's some thought process, and you're really hitting home the point that being authentic on stage may not necessarily be just you're there and totally in the moment and you're totally spontaneous. In fact, in the article, you mentioned that it takes planning and effort to build an authentic person, which interestingly enough, almost seems counterintuitive.
It is true that it takes planning to become an authentic speaker. You have to know your material absolutely cold. You have to prepare and prepare and prepare so that you know that material perfectly. Because the person who is stumbling over their facts and over their basic points is going to come across as inauthentic because they're struggling. You have to prepare in that regard to know your material well. You also have to prepare by developing a deep sense of self-awareness so that you know what's going on with you. Even if you don't share every element of what's going on with you, you have to know it. In addition, it takes study and practice and thought to become an emotionally intelligent person. Some people have it intuitively. They're just like these are the people who are everybody's friends, who everybody wants to be with. They're just the nicest people in the world. I have to say, I am not one of the nicest people in the world. I'm a nice person. But it's something that I have to work on because I tend to be a little impatient, a little get to the point. I wrote a book called Get to the Point. Give me a break. I wrote a book called Get to the Point. Sometimes I'm like, come on now, get to the point. Yeah, that's authentic to me, but it's lacking in emotional intelligence to do that to a person who is struggling to make their point. So in that sense, for me to be authentically emotionally intelligent, I have to be conscious. That's my go-to. My go-to is get to the point, right? That's my go-to. But if I'm empathetic and emotionally intelligent, I'm going to observe that impulse in myself. I'm going to say, oh, right, I want to tell him to get to the point. But he's the person who can't get to the point. And so I have to have compassion for him. Then I go through that mental process and then I say, oh, tell me more. And that is a sign of authenticity because it's a product of a whole internal process that the other person will never be aware of. But they will be aware that I responded empathetically and they will feel that I'm authentic. And it will be authentic because I went through the process of self-knowledge.
So it means waiting a little longer or helping them get to the point until you say, get to the point.
Exactly. There are a variety of ways to do it, but your natural impulse, don't think that your natural impulse is necessarily the most appropriate impulse. And it may not actually be authentic in the sense that I'm talking about. Because it may be a knee-jerk reaction. It may be an emotional reaction. It may be a superficial reaction. It may be a defensive reaction. And that's not what I mean by authentic. I'm looking at a deeper level to look and be yourself as a compassionate, loving human being. And I do believe that for most of us, I mean, I'm sure there are some people who are exceptions, but we all have that within us. And that is part of our authenticity. And flying off the handle is not authentic. It's dumb.
We're talking about the planning. I was thinking Mark Twain's famous quote that he said, what is it? It usually takes me more than 3 weeks to prepare a good impromptu speech.
Right. And he also, I don't know exactly who said it, but somebody said, I'm sorry, this letter is too long. I didn't have time to make it shorter.
Well, that's true. The same as writing. It's easy to write 1,000 words. It's harder to compress it down into 1 paragraph or 2 paragraphs.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what you're telling me, if we think back to Ron, and of course, folks, you can read this in the article, Ron felt that, I guess, he came across inauthentic, but perhaps if he had mastered some of the techniques, more eye contact, was a little bit more prepared, then maybe perhaps he wouldn't have come across inauthentic or didn't feel authentic.
Or if he had tapped into a different part of himself and thought, I am speaking to friends. And when you see the audience as your enemy, it's going to be really hard to be authentic. You can do it. And some CEOs are very good at that. They can go up to a big employee meeting where people are not thrilled with them, and they can still present themselves as authentic. But I want to speak to about another point about Ron, which is that Ron was speaking from a script. It's very difficult to come across as a natural speaker when you're speaking from a script. And I discourage people from writing scripted speeches, because when you're looking down and reading the paper, you are not reading the room. And as a speaker, it's essential to continually read the room and get a sense, are people still paying attention? Are they still engaged? Are they looking at their phones? Are they looking at their watches? And if you see that the room is slipping away from you, then you can just do something, suddenly move your arms or move to a different part of the stage, create some change, quickly tell a story. You can change it up if you're reading the room, but if you're reading a script, your eyes are down on the script. Now, I understand that often people need to be reminded of what they were going to say, because otherwise they may inadvertently go off on a tangent. What I recommend, and I'm sure that you have all seen this, and many of your listeners probably already do this, which is just to make a brief list of bulleted points, the topics that you want to cover. And if you've prepared adequately, then that 2 or 3 words in the bullet point is all you'll need to state your point.
So obviously there's needs to be a balance between preparation and spontaneity and scripting and non-scripting.
Exactly. I like that, between preparation and spontaneity. And ironically, the person who is the best prepared is most likely to be able to achieve spontaneity. The person who feels unprepared is grasping onto the speech and grasping onto the paper. But the person who has really mastered their material, they can just speak with confidence, which goes back to the point that it takes planning to be authentic.
Absolutely. Now, Liz, wedding season is soon to be upon us. There's going to be a lot of people getting up there and giving toasts to the bride, toasts to the groom. What advice would you give to those who perhaps might find themselves all dressed up behind the mic and totally unprepared?
You know, I went through this last August at my daughter's wedding. I had thoughts and feelings about the wedding. I had thoughts and feelings about the whole thing, some of which I didn't want to share. I was sitting there. I was the mother of the bride, after all, and everybody knows that I'm more or less a professional speaker, so I knew that I would have to speak. And I was sitting in my chair thinking, what am I going to say? What am I going to say? What am I going to say? And I didn't think it was my turn yet. And then suddenly, somebody just shoved a microphone in my hand. I thought, oh my goodness. And I stood up. And literally, at the moment that I stood up, I didn't know what I was going to say. Oh, no. But I looked at the bride and I looked at the groom and I thought about what I knew about them and about their relationship and about their dreams for the future. And I just started speaking, and everybody loved it. Everybody loved what I said. They loved what I said. They felt very acknowledged. It worked out well. But what grounded me was to look and think about the bride and groom and what makes them special and what makes their relationship special. Or you can know, if you happen to know, how they met, if they met in some strange way, or if they went through drama before they got engaged. You can look at them and let your affection and positive view, hopefully, of the bride and groom, let that well up inside you. And also, this is very important, don't feel like you have to speak for a long time. In other words, don't imagine that nobody's going to be happy if you give a short speech. The truth is, people dread speeches at weddings. It's like, I mean, I'm sure you've had that experience. Oh, gosh, we were having a nice conversation, but here come the speeches, right? So nobody's going to be unhappy if all you say is, wow, it's such an honor and a privilege to be here with John and Sue, and we absolutely wish them the best in their future life together. Let's raise a toast. Nobody's going to be upset if you talk for 90 seconds.
That's true.
Be brief. Nobody wants to listen to a long speech at a wedding. Be clear about that. You don't like to listen to long speeches at weddings. Nobody likes to listen to long speeches at weddings.
Well, folks, if you've gained some golden nuggets from this episode, as I have, you can...
Here I am yelling at you. See, I'm doing the get to the point thing. This is my thing. Get to the point. Oh, my goodness. Well, that was my authentic self.
If no, you... that's fine. No, this is... No, this was my call to action. So I'll have to edit part of this one. Folks, if you've gained some golden nuggets from this episode, as I have, please make sure that you share this episode with your friends and family, and especially anybody who may be going to a wedding this summer. You can find the Toastmasters podcast at toastmasterspodcast.com, toastmasters.org, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and pretty much wherever you get your podcast. Liz, this has been absolutely delightful. And before we go, if you'd like to share with us perhaps what you're up to, what you're doing, where people can reach you if they want to connect.
Well, people can reach me at my website, WorkTalk, W-O-R-K-T-A-L-K, WorkTalk.com. I have some upcoming courses on email effectiveness and also a new course on humanizing the output of material that's written by artificial intelligence like ChatGPT. I do send out Reitemann's monthly writing tips, which are a lot of fun to read and very useful. You can sign up for those also at worktalk.com. And just anyone who's losing sales or productivity or branding due to poor communication should reach out to me.
That's awesome. I love Reitemann's, writing vitamins. I just love that portmanteau. Folks, you can also read Liz's article, Cultivating Authenticity as a Speaker. Learn how to let your true self shine while presenting. And you can find that online and also in the January 2024 issue of the Toastmaster magazine. Liz, thank you so much for taking the time. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
Ever imagined a book written just for you? Introducing Pooks.ai. We're not just another bookstore. We're the future of reading. Our state-of-the-art AI adapts each book to your specific needs, creating a personalized masterpiece. Visit Pooks.ai now. That's P-O-O-K-S.ai. And use the promotion code SPOTIFY for a whopping 50% off. Pooks.ai. Your personalized book awaits.